our speakers all the way from New Jersey tonight is CJ.
Thanks, Charlie.
I'm an addict. My name's CJ.
I'm CJ.
And I'm here by God's... Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm here by God's grace and mercy and the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I'm a little nervous, you know. I'm as nervous as the first time I had sex. But there wasn't 100 people here. Yeah. I was by myself, you know. It's good to be clean, ain't it? You know, and he got half of it right. I was born and raised in Jersey, but I live in Miami now. And, I've just come over here on May 20th. I've just been in 11 countries. I'm really, really exhausted, but like Charlie said, maybe it'll give me that little spark. You know, I used to think I could travel like I always traveled when I was young, man, but, you know, I'll be 60 in another couple months, you know, and the body just ain't letting me do what I used to do, you know? But it's all good, man, and, you know, it's a miracle that I'm almost 60, you know? And, you know, so I guess I got to share a little over a half hour now, so a little bit of my life, I just tell you, Charlie said easy on the baby stories, you know? But, you know, when I was a kid, you know, most of you all went to school like normal children did. And me, I had epilepsy. And I'd have seizures all the time. So I spent all my life, all my childhood, except for 3 years. 3 years I got to go to school with kids. All the other time I was in hospitals and institutions. And I was on Thorazine and phenobarbital and... I was a Thorazine child, you know, but my love was basketball, as you can tell, and I love sports, and I broke a Major League Baseball player's record. I was supposed to be something in baseball, but my passion in my heart was basketball, and, the one year they let me go to school, I was on the football team, and to cover up for all those feelings that I had inside, my insecurities and everything, I would always be like the class clown or try to make people laugh or do something to feel a part of. And so we were coming home from the football team, and I hung my ass out the window and the cheerleaders were in the bus behind us. And they didn't take too kindly of that, you know? And they threw me off the football team, and then I tried out for the basketball team, and I was me and this other guy, we were the two best, you know, and, you know, I just knew I was going to make the team, and 27 kids tried out for the team, 25 kids made it, one kid quit, and I was the only kid that was cut. I didn't know the reason why I was cut. Doing the fourth step, I know the reason I was cut. It's because they didn't want somebody with an attitude and did the stupid things that I did, you know. And I never knew how to deal with those feelings. And it wasn't like today where people hug and it's okay and talk about your feelings and everything. You know, where I come from, man, you were a fucking punk, man, if you talked about you were weak, you know, showed any type of weakness, you know. So I started walking on the other side of the street, you know, with the hippies. It was the late 60s, you know, and they asked me if I wanted to get high, and I just said yes. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, you know, and they said, here, smoke some of this, you know, and I started getting high, and you know, they wanted me to come back and hang with them that night. They wanted me to be a part of, and for someone that was separated from people my whole life, it was the first time that I felt any form of love or somebody wanting me to be around them, because I would always have seizures and people never wanted me around them. So, but I'm not going to give you this long story. go through the childhood part, but I just, that's how I ticked in the beginning. And what it did, it brought me to living a free lifestyle, and I left school when I was 15 years old, and I hitchhiked around the country for 13 years, and then all of a sudden, I was in New York one day, and my buddy said, come on, we're going to the Lower East Side, man, and he said, we're going to teach you how to get high, real high, you know, and they taught me how to bob for my pecker, you know, So they turned me on to this drug, and the guy, you know, I was this cat that was like a really free spirit, and it took me and it brought me to living in a 4x4 block radius, selling my ass on the corner, picking crust out of the garbage can, and living in abandoned buildings. I just call it my abandoned minium, you know, It was a hopeless life, you know? What happened, you know? This wasn't a storybook, you know, that baseball superstar and all that, you know, the fantasies and reality was that the disease of addiction beat me down, and I was a master of, I haven't had a drink in 39 years, you know? But I don't claim that, you know? But what I was a master of... When I got bad with one drug, I would jump to another one, and then I'd surrender to that one and jump to the next one. And, you know, but here I was at the end of my road, and I turned my buddy Charlie, and it really was Charlie. I said, dude, man, I can't do this no more, you know. At the time, I was 129 pounds. I could windsurf on a Dorito, you know. I mean, I was sucked up, man. And in today's day and age, you'd probably call me Count Crackula, you know? But I was real beat up, man. And I said, Charlie, he says, I know a good place to go. It's called Narcotics Anonymous. And so I wanted to go somewhere where they didn't think I was an addict. Like I told you, I'm 129 pounds. When I walk on the street, people cross, the sea parts almost when I walked down the street. And I went to a meeting outside, it was all blacks. Yeah, I went there, I was the only white guy. They loved me up. And it was this guy, he had no legs, his name was Normel. And there was this guy named Jim P. And they were high-fiving each other. And they just had the spirit of life in them, you know? And you know, I left that meeting early. I just put my head down and started crying, because I knew that I could never have the spirit and the aliveness that they had. And but it's like H and I, we go and we carry the message. We try to carry the message, only God can deliver it. But that smile was enough that I knew when I was beat up again, I knew that I could come back. And that's what I did. I came back and I came to this meeting in Union, New Jersey, Burnett Junior High School. And I was like the kid at my first, you know, going to school for the first time. I drove around the school, drove around again. These people, they look too shady. You know, here I just come from the Lower East Side where, you know, you don't get seedier, you know. And I go inside. I wait until everybody goes inside. I walk in and they say, is anyone new? And I said, yes. I said, I'm new. I need help. I need a sponsor, you know, and because that's what they told me to do. And the whole meeting got up and proceeded to give me love and hugs. And I tell you what, I can't thank you enough for fanning my flame of desire. Because when we walk in here, we ain't got much but a little tiny little spark. And it's the older members and even the ones with 2 days, 3 days that fan our flame. It's okay, brother. It's okay, we've been there, you know? And they just give us that reassurance, that hope that we too can get clean, you know? And afterwards they said, you know what? They said, we're going to the diner. They said, we want you to come to the diner with us. And I said, I ain't got no money. And they said, we didn't ask you if you had any money. We asked you to come to the diner with us. So I go to the diner and they buy me a cheeseburger deluxe. For a cat like me that was eating crust out of the garbage can, that was like a Philly mignon steak, you know? You know? And I looked over and I said, how can I ever, ever, ever repay you for what you did? And they said, when you're able to, do for someone else what was done for you. And I want to say that's the most expensive fucking hamburger I ever had. But it got me coming back to my second meeting. Because I wanted another cheeseburger deluxe. So I came back, and I came back to the second meeting. And this is where, you know, I call it coincidences. It's God's way of remaining anonymous. And what happened was, there was this girl in that meeting who was in the same shooting gallery I was, celebrating 2 years clean. And 2 years was mighty impressive. But the change in her attitude, her behavior, her total giving of herself, I know her as a conniving, cunning B-word, you know? Here she was, miraculous. You could tell she had had awakening of the spirit as a result of these steps. And what she did was, for 2 weeks, she picked me up every day, and she took me to meetings for 2 weeks. She got me involved in the fellowship. She introduced me to all the people I needed, the winners and everything. And then after 2 weeks, she let me go. She said, now you're on your own. And I know some of you are saying, you know, I thought it's the men with the men, women with the women. My book talks about it's the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. It's without parallel. And this chick took me for the right reasons and took me and showed me around and gave me a life today, you know. It's sad to say that after 15 years that she thought she could have one drink. And I never forget when I had 22 years, they asked me, heard I was coming up from Florida. And they said, will you go into a facility, you know? And they know I love H&I. It's my heart, you know? And they said, will you go and carry a message? And I said, yeah. And you know who was in the first row? The girl with 2 years clean. That it relapsed after 15. And I was able to give her the same hope that she gave me. And she's clean ever since now. She's coming up on 5 years clean. You know, God is good, you know. But she gave me that direction, that point. And I got that sponsor to go on this journey through the 12 steps. We come in here with fractured personalities. And what the steps do is they help heal this fractured personality inside us. It helps us get right with ourselves. It helps us get right with others. And it helps us get right with God, you know. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you a few things that have happened to me and how I incorporated the steps in each situation, how I utilized them. And I come in here, right? And I met this cat from San Diego. He used to come out from every year to visit his family because they were sick. His name is Ronnie G. And Ronnie was a great guy, had a great message and everything, and he invited me out to San Diego. So I went to go see him one time, and he's doing a 45-minute workout in his garage, and I'm sitting there, and I'm huffing away, you know, and he sits down next to me afterwards, and he looks and he goes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cigarette butts in 45 minutes. He said, dude, do you ever think about anything other than smoking? I said, dude, I think a lot of things, but that ain't one of them, you know? You know, they say, you know, you can get the monkey off your back, but the circus is still in town, you know? And those thoughts were, but, you know, smoking, that damn sure wasn't, you know, one of the things. And he said, CJ, he said, you probably have the same fear about giving up the cigarettes as you did about giving up the drugs. And he said, you know, you thought there was, he said, I messed that up. But anyhow, he said, CJ, you thought there was no life after drugs, and it was only after you gave up drugs you began to live. He said, you need to have faith and trust in the love and power that came into your life and removed the obsession for you to use drugs, can come into your life and remove the obsession for you to stop smoking. And he said, he put his hand on my shoulder and said, I'll say a prayer for you. And I said, okay. Another one. But I woke up the next day, and when I woke up, I looked at him. I ripped him up. And I haven't had a cigarette in 23 or 24 years. I'm not really sure. I know it's December 19th. The key thing is that I just don't pick up the first one. But how I did it was, I got honest in the first step with what was making my life unmanageable. I became willing to surrender to it, and I surrendered. And I believe in the second step, it talks about we act the way we always act, we're going to get what we always got, and if we get what we always got, we're going to feel the way we always felt. I didn't come in here to get off of drugs to kill myself with another disease of addiction. I was at a meeting in Montenegro just 2 days ago, and they said, okay, let's go. Okay, had the speaker, and then the speaker, okay, now let's go have a cigarette break. It's amazing how we come to a program that deals with the disease of addiction, yet we have a break to support the disease of addiction. Funny. Yeah, it just kills me. But anyhow, but I tell you, you know, and in the third step, I made that decision just not to pick that first one up. And the third step has been a unbelievable step for me. It's a step where I, more or less, it's like if you ever played poker and you know, you got a good hand. I got a good hand. It's called the 12 Steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And I had a hard time with the third step. I was all caught up with God and this and that. And everybody back in the days when I got clean in the 80s, they were talking about, you know, God is good and everybody be all the time. And they'd be high-fiving. And you know, it was like a Southern Baptist thing, you know. And you know, I didn't have this God, you know. And I felt different. I felt like I didn't belong. And there's a saying in this, and it says, we need to be honest about our belief if we are to grow spiritually. And my belief was I didn't have a God. I had a higher power, something that was loving, caring, and greater than myself, but I didn't have this thing that y'all call a God, you know? And because something magical happened when we come here, you know? And I feel better here. So that was my power. That was my higher power for a long time. But so I told my sponsor, I said, sponsor, I don't have this God. I don't feel like I belong here. I don't have the God that y'all seem like you got, you know? And he says, CJ, do you believe it's God's will for you to work the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous? And I said, without a doubt. And he said, then make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of Narcotics Anonymous. Continue on with the steps, and he'll reveal himself somewhere else down the line. And you know, that was the greatest thing I ever heard. Then I pushed all the chips in, and I did a fourth step. And I needed to get all that stuff out, because in the third step it talks about that we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And the 11th step, it talks about God's will and our will become one in an intuitive manner. How does that happen? It happens by making that decision in the third step to continue on with the fourth. As we're doing that fourth, we write about all the shame, all the guilt, all the different things, the different patterns in our lives. And we get that. I had to talk about selling my ass on the corner. I had to talk about being molested. When I hitchhiked around the country, a guy put a gun to my head and raped me. You know, I had to talk. I had to get all this stuff up and out of me so more God could come into me. See, the more we get with the steps, the more God utilizes us and uses us as a vessel, because he sees me as a conniving person when I was using. And today, people see that same person, just like I saw that girl with 2 years. She was an attraction just by her being a part of the program, an active member, and her spirit was my hope. And this is what we need. And as I start to do that, in the fifth step, we share all that stuff, and we get to the exact nature. And I found out the exact nature was all revolved around self-centered fear, either losing something I think I have or not getting what I think I want, you know? And the fourth step is like a blueprint. It's a blueprint to progress. How honest you are in the fourth step and what is revealed to you with your higher power is how your sixth step, your eighth step is all started out. And what my sponsor had me do, he had me write on all the defects and how they manifested in my life. He had me write on the opposite of the defects. And then he had me write on how my life would be like without the defects in my life. And it got me to see how my life could be without these things that are blocking me. See, these defects are all blocking me. Just like all the garbage I had inside me in the fourth step, I had to get that up and out of me so more God could come in me. Now I got all these defects that are blocking me. They're all revolved around self-centered fear. And all the other things that revolve, all the assets, the opposites, were revolved around love. You know, I want to say, now I'm bouncing back and forth and I'm a little tired, so I'm trying to run on time. But a couple of things happened to me. You know, when I stopped smoking, these three fingers used to stick together and my teeth were all rotted and everything. And, you know, I always wondered why I couldn't get in a relationship. I got three fingers stuck. And I got all, you know, decayed mouth and everything. And so I got some teeth work done and I got, you know, stopped smoking. The fingers came apart. And N.A. boy met N.A. girl, you know. And I'll try to speed this up because I want to get a couple things in. But what had happened was Christmas was coming up. My sponsor said, what you going to get her? You can't get her a bag of dope, you know. And so I said, well, I thought I'd get us a trip to Hawaii. He said, oh, no, that Hawaii, that's a good trip. That's a good present. You know, I took her to Hawaii. And we got in an argument, and she left me for the taxi driver. I mean, it's funny. It really is. But at that time and moment, where's the love, man? Where's the love? That's some empathy. No. But as I was crying and sitting there by the beach, and there's going to be these certain times in your recovery where it's only going to be you, God, and what you learned, and what you're going to do. You know, I picked up the phone, called my sponsor. Didn't get him. You know, I called my sponsees. I always say, dial the op. But hey, well, I ain't going there. I get this story out there. Now, I'm trying to speed up now because I only got so much time. So then I said, well, heck with these N.A. girls. They're crazy. I'm going to an A.A. dance. You know? You know? Yeah. So I went there, and I met this beautiful girl. And I'll say it to the day I die. She was a special person. She really was. And we were going down to where we met, and we were going to celebrate our one-year anniversary. And she celebrated it by telling me that I'm going to be a daddy, you know? And they talk about lost dreams awaken, you know, new possibilities arise, you know? And it's like, oh, my God, this is, God is good, you know? Come on, how does it get any fucking better than this, you know? And then 2 weeks later, she came back and said she got rid of the kid on me, you know? And you know, I just picked my ass up, put it in the bag, came to a meeting, I raised my hand, I hit the fetal position. Everybody, they literally had to pick me up out of the meeting. But I didn't use. I didn't use no matter what, you know? You know, and then special thing happened, you know? Yeah, you may have this one certain person. Maybe it's me tonight, I don't know. You just don't want to hear when they open their mouths, you know, this motherfucker. Yeah. Okay, y'all got one. Okay, good. So in comes this dude, I call him 4x4, you know? And here he comes again. He's talking. So, and all of a sudden he said, isn't it amazing how we can hug the slimiest, grimiest people that walk in the program, but we can't go home and hug our mothers? And it was like, oh, he hit me right between the eyes. Here I am practicing all these principles with all yous, but what am I doing to mend that relationship that I had torn? In 1975, my mother was in the hospital for 8 days. Do you think I went to see her once? Tomorrow. So she always thought that nobody'd ever be there for her. And you know, so I started spending 2 nights a week with her. That's what our step work says. It's not about saying we're sorry. I've been a sorry motherfucker my whole life. It's about changing my attitude, my behavior, my actions. So I start on Sundays, we watch Touched by an Angel. And on Tuesday, we watch the Knicks or the Yankees, because that's what she wanted. And you know what? I started spending quality time with my mom. You know, it was nice. And about a year late, year and a half later, my mother came down with cancer. And I was able to spend the last 4.5 months every day at home with her, in bed with her, rubbing her bald head, because that's what she liked. And the people in the program came and brought a meeting to my house. They came and brought food to my house. They loved me so I could go back in and love my mother some more. You know, where did I learn how to suit up and show up? Narcotics Anonymous. Where did I learn how to suit up and be here for someone else? In Narcotics Anonymous. And now y'all taught me how to be. I can never thank yous enough. But this is my greatest moment in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm sitting there and I'm rubbing my mother's bald head and laying in bed with her. And her friend Eileen comes walking in. And she says, "Hi, Eileen." She says, "Hi, honey." My mother was so sweet, they called her honey. You know, I mean, really. And my mother said to her, she says, "Eileen, remember all those talks about how our sons would never be there for us?" And the lady, Eileen, put her head down in shame. And my mother says, "No, no, no, Eileen." And she looked up at me and she says, "Don't worry. Your son will be there just like mine's there for me." And it's the times where you feel God, the amends, and my gratitude for Narcotics Anonymous. I can't never give back to you what you gave me. You gave me that priceless moment with my mother. And she wanted to come here, see me celebrate when I had 10 years. And she, a couple weeks short, she missed it, you know. But she's with me now. She's always been with me. Her spirit's inside me. And, you know, I had a bunch of great years. I mean, recovery's been really, really good to me, you know. I love to travel. I'm back on my travel kick, as you can tell in the beginning. I've been to 11 countries on this trip here. And But I came here and I was at the London Convention last time they had it. And you know, I saw a whole bunch of wonderful people that I've always seen when I come. And I left. And little did I know that goodbye, that last hug, was almost my last breath. And what had happened, I went back and this girl, who I used to use with and was my girlfriend, never wanted to ever see me again, you know, which was like all the others. But she had heard the miraculous change that has transformed through the 12 steps. And she wanted me to come visit her, like 4 hours away, and come visit her and her husband and stay for the weekend. So I'd be honored. So I came up there, and I went up there, and then a week later after I went up there, her husband's daughter overdosed. And they said, "CJ, will you come and just maybe give her a little hope? Just share something with her? You know, we've seen what it's done in your life, and maybe you can help us." I said, "It'd be an honor." You know, so I got in the car and drove 4 hours. And I hadn't taken a dump in 9 days. And I was feeling really weak, you know, when I got there. So we called the pharmacy, and they got me this like clear liquid stuff to drink and this big ass enema. And they said, "Don't worry, this will flush a horse out." Well, it didn't flush a horse out, and it didn't work, you know. And so then she called the hospital, and she literally carried me into the car. And what had happened was I had cancer. I had a blockage. And, you know, I got woke up, and I got this colostomy bag that I still got. you know, I'm all cut up. They're telling me I got cancer, the thing I feared most in life. And I was like in shock for 2 or 3 days, you know. I was like, I didn't know how to act, react, what to do. Then all of a sudden, it was just like, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just sort of like the first time I thought, like, I can't do this anymore. Let me go to a meeting, you know. And all of a sudden, it was just like all this positive thought. It was just like, no, baby, God's going to heal me. God's going to come into my life and use me as an example and heal me, you know. And people, I was so positive about being healed with the cancer that people thought I was a lunatic, you know. They said, man, you really? And I said, no, I really believe. I do. I believe God's going to heal me, man. And, you know, and I go to Thailand to get treated. If I go 2 minutes over? Okay. I go to Thailand, right? I'll try to tell this story as fast as I can. Try to follow it. I go there. I help the newcomer. I'm in Thailand. I help this new guy. His name is Jabu. He's from Africa, and he's in Thailand. And I just hug him. I love him up. I take him to get some food. You know, I do what we do. Bought him a cheeseburger deluxe, you know, and so on and so forth. And I was his friend, you know. And meanwhile, boom, boom, boom. You know, now all of a sudden I come back to Thailand, and I need to find an oncologist. And so the one guy says, well, you should go talk to Jabu. And so here I go, I talk to Jabu. And I said, you know, hey, you know, they told me to give you a call, man. I'm looking for an oncologist. And he says, well, you know what I do? He says, I'm an oncologist. So they never know what's going to happen. So anyhow, he says, but I'm a holistic guy now. I do it holistically. I'm going to send you to the number one cancer doctor in all of Asia. So all of a sudden, I go where he sends me. I go there. I'm trying to speed this up. I go to Chula Hospital. In Chula Hospital, I go to see the doctor. They say, I got to have the paperwork. I got to go get the original paperwork. So I got to come back to America. But they made the appointment for 3 months down the road because that's how they do it in Thailand. You got to go into a queue. So I came home, spent the holidays, boom, boom, boom. Now I go back, and now I got my appointment February 3rd. I go there, give all the stuff. I say, well, where's Dr. Vero? You know, that's who I'm supposed to meet. You know, Dr. Vero. That's who Jabu hooked me up with. And he says, oh, no, no. He says, now that we see all this information, now go get these tests done, and then 3 months from now, well, you'll see Dr. Vero. I said, dude, I said, I got cancer. My father died 8 days after he got cancer. My mother had it for 4.5 months. I said, you know, come on, give me a break. You know, what the fuck? You know? He says, this is just how it goes. This is Thailand. You know, and I was, oh, fuck. I turned to my buddy. I said, come on, man. He says, CJ, a new meeting just started up last Monday. The first meeting started up. Let's go support it. I said, all right. Where do you think the meeting is? In a hospital. So I go in the hospital. I say, well, let me see if I can get the test done here. I get the test done here, right? They say, oh, come in on Thursday, you get the test done. I was like, oh, great. So all of a sudden, and maybe some of you know them, so I'm sitting, and I'm facing where you got to pay. And it's way past that, as far as you can see back there is the street. And all of a sudden, I get a tap on my shoulder. And I look up, and it's this guy, Steve, from London. I said, Steve, what's up? Hey, what the hell are you? How'd you see me? What are you doing here? He says, hi, I saw you from the street. And he says, you know, I was heading to the meeting next door. I said, there's a meeting? He says, oh, okay, I'll meet you over there. I just got to pay my bill. Pay my bill, go to the meeting next door. And this guy's there, and he's helped a lot of guys. And he just said, hey, if you're open, we have a good doctor in that hospital you were in called Dr. Irene. So maybe you go to Dr. Irene if you're open to another doctor. I said, I really don't want to wait 3 months, so I'm open. So he writes down all the information. Next day I go in, I see Dr. Irene, and Dr. Irene says, oh, can you come in on Sunday? And I said, sure. She says, okay, I want you to come in on Sunday because you have an appointment with Dr. Vero. Isn't it weird? If that NA meeting hadn't started the week before, NA has saved my life. I don't know how many times. And after seeing Dr. Vereau, Dr. Vereau says, we see no signs of cancer in your body. So the miracle that has happened countless times in my life is continuously happening in my life. And it's thanks to all you people that helped fan my flame of desire when I first got here. Thank God for the girl who took me around to meetings for 2 weeks and has blessed me with this life. I owe everything to Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm just so thankful that you had me here today, and I hope you got something. Thank you.